The third day is over. You have 7 more left to work. Tomorrow, the fourth day, is a very important day for you. You will start practicing Vipassana. That means you will start entering the field of Panya, wisdom, insight. Whatever you practiced for these 3 days was a very important prerequisite for your work tomorrow. The actual work starts tomorrow. These 3 days you were preparing yourself to start the actual work of Vipassana meditation. Without strong sila, it is not possible to practice Vipassana, not possible to get the results, proper results of Vipassana. Without good samadhi, it is not possible to practice Vipassana. Therefore, these 3 days, you are observing your 5 precepts, the sila that you had taken on the first day. This was the foundation. Stronger the foundation, the stronger the building will be on the foundation. So with a strong foundation you started working with samadhi, practicing anapana. Sila is necessary to have right type of samadhi. Even 25 centuries back in India, and so also to some extent even today, there were teachers, there are teachers who give no importance to sila. They say, not necessary, you do whatever you like, whatever you feel pleasant to you, carry on. But still you can meditate and get all the pleasant experiences of meditation. The aim is to get some pleasant experience of meditation. But Vipassana is not for that. Vipassana is to get the mind purified, purified at the deepest level, at the root level, for which not ordinary samadhi but samma samadhi is necessary, the right type of samadhi. So perfect sila is necessary for right type of samadhi, and right type of samadhi is necessary to develop panya. And panya is necessary to reach the final goal of full liberation, full enlightenment. Sila for samadhi, samadhi for panya, panya for vimutti, that is liberation. This is just when you start the work, but as you proceed, you find all 3 of them, sila, samadhi, panya, they start helping each other. It's like a tripod with 3 legs. Even if one is weak, it can't stand. All 3 must be strong. Sila will help, samadhi will help panya. Samadhi will help, sila will help panya. Panya will help, sila will help, samadhi. All 3 are interlinked and they start helping each other. If one is perfect in sila, good. It gives its own benefits, good results. But merely having perfection in sila alone cannot take one to the final goal of full liberation. One is perfect in sila and has very deep experience of samadhi, yet this also cannot take to the goal of full liberation. Panya is necessary. This person who became fully enlightened, Siddhartha Gautama. His life was full of Shila even from the young age, childhood age. And then he practiced Samadhi. Leaving the householder's life, he went to different teachers. The highest Samadhi of those days, 8 absorption Samadhis. He practiced all that. And yet he found that he is not fully liberated. Because he noticed at the depth of the mind there are sleeping defilements which are like sleeping volcanoes. So long as these volcanoes are there, they can erupt any time, will overpower you, and again you will be full of misery. Roots have to be taken out. Roots of impurities at the depth of the mind has to be taken out. And for that, he continued his search and rediscovered this technique of vipassana. This is panya. Only by practicing vipassana, he could develop his panya and become enlightened person. Otherwise, it would have been impossible. Vipassana was lost to the country. Talk was there. Panya was lost to the country in its perfection. He rediscovered that. Three parts of Dhamma, the Eightfold Noble Path in Shila, which was there. Three parts of Samadhi, the Eightfold Path, were there. Now another two parts which come under Panya, that is Samma, Sankappo, Samma, Ditthi, Samma, Sankappo, right type of thoughts. When someone comes to a course like this, initially, at the surface level of the mind, there are certain impurities which keeps one very agitated. Some impact on the mind of some incident. And then one starts observing the respiration, the thoughts become very predominant, and many a times the thoughts are full of defilements. In some cases there might be anger, in some cases hatred, in some cases lot of sadness, depression, in some cases maybe passion. These thoughts keep on overpowering, and you try your best to come back to respiration. Thoughts keep on overpowering, you come to respiration. One day, 2 days, 3 days, you find not that all the thoughts have gone away, but the pattern of the thought has changed now. It is not as violent as it was before. Thoughts are still there, but now thoughts are mostly pertaining to Dhamma, pertaining to the path. One starts understanding what the path is, how I should meditate, what is the proper way of meditation, what are the difficulties, all that keep coming in the mind. Not the thoughts of harming somebody. This is Samma Sankappo. Still it is not the right type of panya which made him fully enlightened. Good thoughts were there in the teaching of all the teachers of India before him, contemporary to him, and after him. Have good thoughts. They are necessary. Then you can see things properly. And that is Samma Ditthi, a right understanding, a right view. You can see things properly as they are. Like the sun is covered with very dark clouds, black thick clouds, and you don't see the light, it's all darkness. Some layers of these clouds go away. Clouds are still there, but they are not so thick nor so dark, they are thin. Light, you start seeing light, although all have not gone away. That is necessary. This type of samma sankappa thoughts are still there. You have not reached the stage where the mind has become free from thinking, free from thought. It is there. But it is not that disturbance which won't allow you to take the next step. And the next step is samma ditthi, the right understanding, understanding of the reality as it is. And this is the real panya. Well, there are three stages of panya, wisdom. Progressively, one moves towards the panya which will liberate. Three types of panya in the language of those days. It was called Suttamaya Panya, the next Chintamaya Panya, and the third Bhavanamaya Panya, Suttamaya Panya. You heard something, you read something, wisdom of somebody else, a wise person, an enlightened person, a saintly person, speaks words of Dhamma, they come in scriptures, you listen directly from this person, or you read scriptures, and you accept it. You accept it most of the time because you have got great faith and devotion in this person, or you have got great faith and devotion in the scripture, particular scripture, and you accept it. Good. Very helpful. Those who have never heard anything about Dhamma, those who have never heard anything about the truth, may remain confused the whole life. At least one has heard about Dhamma, has listened to Dhamma, listened to the right things, correct things. But this is not enough. Just by developing Suttamaya Panya, the wisdom that one heard from somebody or read somewhere, cannot liberate you. It is very good. Very good in the sense that it will give you inspiration, it will give you guidance to take the next step. And the next step is Chintamaya Panya, which means understanding the truth, developing the wisdom at the intellectual level. Human being is a rational being. He is not supposed to accept things blindly. He must use his intellect, have reasoning. Whatever I have heard, whatever I have read, is it logical? Is it pragmatic? Shall I accept it? At the intellectual level, one tries to understand it and one finds at the intellectual level, yes, it is quite logical, quite scientific, quite acceptable, and one accepts it. The second step of panya, very important step, very helpful, helpful in the sense, again, you get inspiration and you get a direction to move towards the third step, which is bhavanamaya panya. Bhava is to happen, to live. Your own wisdom, now your experience, direct experience, you have lived that wisdom, and this alone will liberate you. The first two will be helpful to you, but they cannot liberate. The first two were there in India at that time. The discovery of Buddha was this third, experience it. They were all the talks there. They were teachers who will say, keep yourself away from craving, keep yourself away from aversion. All these sense objects, illusionary, delusionary, and you keep on getting attached to them. You generate misery for yourself. Come out of this attachment, become detached, and you come out of misery. All those teachings were there. But how to come out? Unless one has developed bhavanamaya panya, the wisdom, the direct experience, this starts helping one to come out of the misery. First and the second can be very helpful, can be very harmful also. Many a times they become very harmful. Like Sutmaya Panya, someone is born in a particular family, brought up in a particular society, having faith in a particular tradition, particular scripture, belief. From the young age one gets the mind conditioned with all those acceptances, all those philosophies, beliefs, dogmas, and one starts feeling that this is perfectly all right. All other traditions are useless. They are not correct. My tradition, this is the best, and I accept it. One does not take the next step at all. One feels perfectly satisfied. I have accepted the truth that our scripture says, the truth that the saints have said, the truth that the founder of our religion has said. It is wonderful. That becomes a great barrier, a bondage. Such person will never use the intellect, will never try to reason what is being taught. Far away. To develop one's own ability to experience it is far away. Becomes a big bondage. If someone who is convinced with the Sotamaya Panya and yet being a human being, a human species, wants to reason out things and he starts reasoning, is it true? Is it correct? Is it acceptable? Is it pragmatic? Then the elders get worried. The elders of the family, the elders of the society, the elders of this particular community, they don't like it. They say, oh, you don't have belief. You don't have faith in our scriptures. You don't have faith in the founder of our religion. If you doubt, then you know what the result will be. After death, you will go to hell. And then a description of hell is given. So terrible. And he says, no, Baba, no. I don't like to go to that hell. I accept reasonable or unreasonable, pragmatic or non-pragmatic, anything. I accept. I don't want to go to hell. So poor fellow, he accepts it. Accepts it out of fear. Same very elders, they've got another way. And they will say, look, if you accept whatever is written in our scriptures, whatever our tradition says, our philosophy says, if you accept it, then you know what will happen. After death, you will get heaven. And then a wonderful description of heaven. So wonderful, so wonderful. You will enjoy all these sensual pleasures there. Celestial pleasures. So wonderful, which you can't get in this world. The mouth starts watering. Wonderful. If I get that, I accept everything. I don't mind accepting. By accepting, if I get that heaven, I'm the first person to accept. You accept it. So you accept it either out of blind faith, or you accept out of fear, or you accept out of greed. You are just accepting. You are not using your grey matter to understand what it is. And somebody has taken the next step. That also can become a big bondage. Many a times it so happens. You start reasoning, you find very logical. And especially the belief of your own tradition. Like a good lawyer, you'll find so many ways of convincing yourself, this is correct. Our tradition says so, it is correct. You keep on arguing yourself and get yourself convinced, yes, this is correct. And that is the end of it. Now I know everything. My intellect says this is correct. And you inflate ego. I know everything now. I am such a wise person. I can write books upon books on this philosophy, on this belief. I can give lectures. I can have debates, arguments, discussion to prove that every other belief is wrong. This belief is correct. And this madness will not allow him to take the next step. So these two can become big hindrance. If one starts taking the step in the bhavanamaya panya, then you start experiencing the reality yourself. So long as you are not experienced, the reality is no reality for you. It is always distorted. Each individual has to experience the truth oneself to reach the final goal. This person, Siddhartha Gautama, he realized the truth within himself, developed his bhavanamaya panya, and became an enlightened person, became a liberated person. This panya that is developed within himself could liberate only one person, not two. And that one person was Gautama, Siddhartha Gautama, none else. None else can liberate it because of his wisdom. Others can get guidance, others can get inspiration, that's all right. But each individual has to develop one's own wisdom to reach the final goal of full liberation. One's own wisdom, bhavanamaya panya, the wisdom that you lived, you experienced, this alone can break the bondages of ignorance, of craving, of aversion, of negativity. This alone can eradicate all the miseries. This gives fruit, not the first, not the second. An example, someone very hungry has gone to a restaurant, got his seat, menu is placed before him, he goes through that menu. Ah, wonderful! The food prepared today is very delicious. His mouth starts watering. Wonderful! One incident. Now he orders for the food. It will take some time before it's served. And he looks around, people who had come earlier, they are already served food and they are taking their food and they are enjoying it. Certainly, the food is very delicious today. Look, everybody is enjoying. Again, the mouth starts watering. Second incident. Third incident, the food is served to this person and he starts enjoying it. The first was Sutmaya Panya. That menu card only he had read. He had not tasted it. The second Chintamaya Panya, his intellect sees, because he has seen people when they enjoy something, their facial expressions are of this type, and look, these people are enjoying because their facial expressions say that they are enjoying it. Certainly, it must be very delicious. He has not tasted himself. Only the third time when it was given to him, he started eating it, tasting it, then yes, he started really enjoying it. This is bhavanamaya panya. The first and the second cannot make you taste the reality. Another example. Someone is sick, goes to a doctor, doctor examines, and then writes medicine, a prescription on a paper. Very happy, comes back home, has great faith in the doctor, nothing wrong, one must have faith in one's doctor, physician. But how this one, this faith becomes blind faith, devotion becomes blind devotion. In his house, on the altar, he places a statue of the doctor, picture of the doctor, and offers sweet and fruits and flowers and incense, and then makes 108 rounds around it and bows down 3 times. What does that help? Takes out that piece of paper and keeps on reciting. One pill in the morning, one pill in the afternoon, one pill in the evening, one pill in the morning, one pill in the afternoon. What does one get? Madness. This is what happens when the faith becomes blind faith, the devotion becomes blind devotion. All right, second incident. After all, a human being, a rational being, so he runs to the doctor. Why you gave me this piece of paper? And what is this? How will it help me? The doctor is an intelligent fellow. He says, well, look, this is your disease, and this is the cause of the disease. If you take this medicine, this cause will get eradicated. When the cause gets eradicated, your sickness gets eradicated. Ah, wonderful. Now I understand. My doctor is so wonderful. His medicine is so wonderful. And what he does now? Coming back home, he starts fighting with all the neighbors. Useless. Your doctors are all useless. My doctor is wonderful. The medicine suggested by your doctors is useless. The medicine suggested by my doctor is wonderful. Keeps on fighting. Doesn't take medicine. Keeps on fighting. Oh, this is what happens. Every wise person, a saintly person, an enlightened person, when he finds people miserable, suffering, then he gives this prescription of Dhamma. You practice Sila, you practice Samadhi, you practice Panya, you will come out of your misery. Nobody tries to practice. They start different sects, beliefs, dogmas, rites, rituals, and get involved in that, and nobody practices. No benefit. And the third Panya, Bhavanamaya Panya, is to apply Dhamma in life by direct experience. It is only this which gives the benefit. Your own direct experience. Now the difficulty comes. How to have direct experience? Direct experience of this mind-matter phenomena. How a constant interaction is going on, and because of that, how the negativity gets originated and then starts multiplying, starts overpowering you, and how with the understanding of that you can stop the arising of this negativity, even if it has arisen, you won't allow it to multiply and overpower you. All that has to be experienced. And that is all that is happening at the depth of the mind. You must develop a faculty, an ability, capability to experience it. These 3 days, this is what you were doing. Unless you have that capability, that faculty, you can't practice Vipassana. Not possible. Like if you don't have your eye faculty, you can't see anything. If you don't have your ear sense faculty, you can't hear anything. Similarly, this mind faculty, which takes you to the depth of the mind and matter interaction, unless you have this faculty, you can't. An example. 2 friends, young boys, very poor, live the life of beggar. They go around and beg food. One of them is blind, birth blind. One day it so happened that this friend who was blind, birth blind, he had very high fever. So the other friend said, "All right, you stay here. I will go around and beg food and then we shall eat together." He went. And it so happened that day, a housewife felt very compassionate and she offered a very sweet dish. In our country we call it kheer, a pudding prepared from milk and rice and dry fruits and sweet, etc. This was offered. He was very happy. He enjoyed it. But this is liquid and he has no container to take for his friend. So he could not bring to the friend. Came back and very honestly told him, "Today in the begging I got this kheer, so delicious. But sorry, I could not bring for you. I had no container." "All right, you didn't bring. But tell me, what is this kheer?" "You don't know what is kheer?" "I don't know what is kheer." "Oh, it is white. Because made of milk, so white." "White? Hey, what is white?" "You don't know what is white?" "I don't know what is white." "It's not black." "But what is black?" "You don't know white, you don't know black? What sort of person you are?" I don't know what was white, what's black. Birth blind, how can I know what's white, what's black?" He was looking here and there and he saw one white duck, caught hold of it and brought, "Look, white like this duck." "White like this duck? He has no eyes, how can he see what is white and what is this duck?" He uses his fingertips, passes his hand over this duck. "Ah, now I understand what is white. White is very soft, very soft." "Hey, what soft? What softness has got to do with white? You said it is like this duck, and I touched it, it is so soft, and now you say, why it is not soft? How can I understand what is white? Oh, you mad fellow. I told you white is like this duck, and you can't understand it. All right, let me examine again. And he examines again. From the beak he starts, up to the end of the plume, the whole body. Ah, now I understand, it is crooked. Why it is crooked? So for all those people who talk of high philosophies, but have never experienced anything, because they don't have the faculty to experience it, for them the truth is always crooked. The whole life the truth will remain crooked, crooked, crooked. They can't understand. This faculty to experience the truth is very important, and this is what you started doing. If you are just working with your Shila and don't take the next step of Samadhi, you would not have got this faculty. You started with Samadhi, and if you had worked with the Samadhi with some object of imagination, verbalization, visualization, again you would not have got this faculty, because you worked with the reality, reality pertaining to your own mind-matter phenomena. And you started working on this area with the breath, which is truth, and you are experiencing it. Then the touch of the breath, you are experiencing it. And now the third day you started feeling sensations, the biochemical reactions here. This is how you are going to the deeper levels of your own mind. The deepest level of the mind, what is called the unconscious. Mind is actually not unconscious. This is all the time conscious, day and night, but conscious of the sensations on the body that you started experiencing here. Such sensations are there throughout the body. Throughout the body something or the other is happening, something or the other is happening, some change is taking place, a change with the manifestation of this sensation or a change with the manifestation of that sensation, but some change is going on. And that can be experienced only by whatever you did for these 3 days. A beginning is made. Tomorrow you will explore the entire field and you will find everywhere some sensation or the other. This is how you are moving from the surface level of your mind to the depth of the mind, where deep-rooted complexes from the past are all accumulated there. Where lies the behavior pattern of your mind, the deepest level of your mind. And the behavior pattern of this mind is to react. Whenever it feels any pleasant sensation on the body, it reacts with craving, with clinging. Whenever it experiences any unpleasant sensation on the body, it reacts with aversion, with hatred. You are moving towards that, moving towards that. At the intellectual level, it is very easy to understand that there is a change taking place everywhere. And everything is so impermanent. Anyone who takes birth dies. Anything that is manufactured later or sooner or later gets destroyed. Everything is impermanent. But that is an intellectual understanding. Experience of it can be only within the framework of your body. The law of nature is law of nature, everywhere, inside, outside. But the law of nature that you see outside can be acceptable, can be understood at the intellectual level. But the reality, the law that you experience within the framework of the body can be experienced. And this experience is called bhavanamaya panya. You are living there. You have direct experience. Otherwise, it does not help at the intellectual level. There were teachers before Buddha, at the time of Buddha, after Buddha, who kept on giving the same teaching, but it didn't work to the depth as it worked for people who started developing their own bhavanamaya panya. Like something very traumatic happens in the life. A very near or dear one has passed away. And you take his dead body to the funeral pyre and burn it, or to the graveyard and put it in the grave. While that is going on, one develops so much of wisdom. After all, everything is so impermanent. One who takes birth dies. Nobody is free from death. I will also die one day. People will bring my body, put in this grave, or burn on this funeral pyre. Then what is the use of all this craving, clinging, fighting with people? accumulating this or that, ultimately everything will be left here and my body will be burned. Big wisdom. But how long? As soon as one takes one step out of that graveyard, again the same I, mine, mine. All madness is there. It makes no difference. It was only intellectual understanding. Or people come to such Dhamma talks, such discourses. Wonderful. Now I understand why this attachment is so bad. It gives so much of misery. The more you are attached, the more miserable you are bound to be. Misery, misery. This I is a big misery. Mine is a big misery, big misery. At the end of the discourse, when you go out of the hall, hey, where are my shoes? Who has taken away? My slippers I purchased only today. New ones, what happened? Start crying, mine. Makes no difference. It's all intellectual. Doesn't help. One has to experience. And it is so difficult to experience. So easy to understand at the intellectual level, so easy to accept it at the devotional level, so difficult to experience, because unless you have that faculty to experience, you can't. There is so much of illusion, so much of delusion. At the apparent level something appears to be so, seems to be so, actual level is totally different. Like night time you go to bed, you lit a lamp or a candle, you go to sleep, next day morning you get up and you see the candle, the light of the candle, the light of the lamp, and you are under the impression the same candle, the same light. Where the same candle, where the same light? Every moment a flame arises and passes away, another takes its place and passes away, another takes its place and passes away. There is no interval. Continuously. And that gives an impression, the same flame, the same light, the same flame, the same light. A big illusion. This electric bulb, I pointed towards it twice. One remains under the impression, the same light, the same light. Where the same light? If it was the same light, then why at the end of the month this electric company sends me a bill? You consume so many units, so many dollars, what for? My light I purchased in the market, my switch, and you on it, I get my light. Who are you? What for you want money? He's quite correct. He's generating the electricity. It comes through the wires, gets consumed, new takes its place with such great rapidity. The old one passes away, the new takes its place, the old one passes away with such great rapidity. It gives the impression the same, the same. Another example. You cross the river. Morning you crossed the river, went to the other bank of the river, whole day you worked there, and then again you took the boat and came on this side of the river. You are under the impression, I have crossed the same river. Where the same river? Even if you take a dip in this river, you take a dip and the head above the water, second dip, head above the water, third dip, head above the water, you are under impression that I am taking dip in the same river. Where same river? Constant flow is there. The dip that you had in the river is gone. Not a single drop remains. All have gone. Second dip in a second river altogether. Third dip in a third river altogether. The morning you crossed this river by your boat, by evening it was a totally new river. And yet the impression remains the same. The same river, the same light. How to come out of this? Certain things which are within the capacity of your sense organs, you have got eyes and you can see things, is a limitation for that. The flame of the lamp arising, passing. If you see very carefully, you can notice, yes, arising, passing. But the light of electricity, it arises and passes with such a great rapidity beyond your eyes' capacity. The flow of the river, yes, it is flowing. The second dip is a new river. Third dip is a new river. If you give attention, you can understand. But how to understand? This fellow who took the first dip is gone. Second dip is taken by altogether a new person. Third dip is taken by altogether a new person. How to understand that? You don't have that faculty to experience it. If one has not practiced vipassana, then this Goenka, who started talking about half an hour ago, will remain under the impression, the same Goenka. I'm the same Goenka. The same Goenka was yesterday. The same Goenka was 1 year ago, or 10 years ago, 50 years ago, 60 years ago, 67 years ago, same Goenka. We are same Goenka. Every moment this Goenka is dying, another Goenka is taking birth. Every moment this Goenka is dying, another Goenka taking birth. The entire physical structure made of these subatomic particles, arising, passing, with such great rapidity. Such great rapidity. This speed creates illusion, delusion, confusion. One cannot understand the reality. Even if one accepts the reality at the intellectual level, because the scientists have said so, the entire material world, there is no solidity, it's only wavelets. The modern scientist says so. Well, an enlightened person like a Buddha has said so. There is no solidity anywhere, just wavelets, entire universe, mind and matter, nothing but wavelets, vibration. Because you have got faith in them and you accept, that doesn't help. You have to experience yourself. And this is what was done by him to reach the final goal of full liberation. And that is what everyone has to do to understand the real change taking place. Every moment changing. With great rapidity, changing. A child is born. You see the child, beautiful, tender. You see the child after 10 years, a big change has come. And you see with the interval of 20 years, big change, 30, 40, 60, 80 years, unbelievable. The same child? How he became like this? And how he became like this? Not that at the end of every 10 years, he went to bed and some God Almighty passed a magic wand over his body and he changed the person. Nothing doing. Every moment change is taking place, every moment changing, decaying, growing. This is the law of nature. This law of nature, if one accepts at the intellectual level or at the devotional level, does not help at all. It is just an intellectual pleasure, intellectual entertainment, or a devotional pleasure, a devotional entertainment. It won't help. But at the actual level, when one starts experiencing it, it makes such a big difference. Such a big difference. And this is what he did. What you have started doing is just a very tiny step. It's a long path. One has to investigate so much deep inside to understand what this material structure is, what this mind is, and what interaction is going on at a very deep level. And this made him fully enlightened. Dividing, dissecting, disintegrating, dissolving, he reached the stage where he came to the ultimate truth pertaining to the matter, the ultimate truth pertaining to the mind, the ultimate truth pertaining to the mental contents, the mental concomitants which arise with the mind. And then it transcended that and experienced something which is beyond mind and matter. For the matter, dividing, dissecting, he came to the tiniest subatomic particle of which the entire body is made, the tiniest, to which he gave a name, Kalapa. Kalapa means a unit, a material unit. Tiniest material unit which cannot be further separated. He called it Artha Kalapa. Artha means eight. Eight things joined together make this unit, and these eight things cannot be separated. They are always together. The four basic elements, like earth, water, fire, air, and each one has its own characteristic, joined together eight. These characteristics are more important, and that can be experienced. When one reaches to that stage, then it becomes easy to understand the mind also at the ultimate level. This is the reality of the mind at the ultimate level. This is the reality of every mental content at the ultimate level. And this made him understand what is this mind-matter phenomenon. With such a great rapidity, all wavelets, but with such a great rapidity, things arise, pass. He says, by the time I snap my fingers, or by the time I blink, this tiny little subatomic particle arises, passes, trillions of times. A Western scientist also has come to the same conclusion. A professor in Berkeley University, he was studying, trying to understand how this atom is working. This was clear to the scientists of the West a century ago, that there is no solidity in the material world, mere wavelets. He was eager to know, very inquisitive to know, the tiniest particle, how many times it arises and passes in 1 second. And to find out that, he invented an instrument which he very rightly called bubble chamber. Like bubble, it arises, passes. And with the help of this bubble chamber, he could find out and then announce that this tiniest atom, it arises and passes in 1 second, 22 zeros after one. And here, another scientist in the East says that by the time I snap my fingers or blink my eyes, trillions of times it arises and passes. They came to the same conclusion. And yet, what a great difference. Quite a few students from this part of the world, California, Berkeley, they came to India, took courses when they heard about this professor. And he's a very renowned professor. He passed away recently and he got Nobel Prize. And Nobel Prize is not given to any Tom, Dick and Harry. Somebody must have invented something which people didn't know. So he was a very famous man. So out of inquisitiveness, they went, curiosity, to see this person who reached the stage which an enlightened person reached. And they found him a bundle of misery, full of tension. Why? He could not come out of his misery. Why he could not come out of his tension? Whereas somebody coming to the same conclusion got free from all miseries. Because bhavanamaya panya was missing. He had come to this conclusion with the help of his apparatus, his instrument, the bubble chamber. He has great faith in this bubble chamber. He has great faith in his own intellect. And he says it is so. But this person is not using any scientific instrument or apparatus. Only his experience, direct experience. And this makes all the difference. When you go deep inside to understand the reality of your mind and matter interaction, it is not for the sake of curiosity. Not to quench the thirst of your inquisitiveness. It is, the purpose of it is to come out of the ignorance and see how, out of ignorance, you keep on generating impurity after impurity, defilement after defilement, negativity after negativity, and you become a bundle of misery. To change that habit pattern, one has to go deep inside, and experience the truth. The first truth which one starts experiencing is the truth of change. Every moment a change is taking place. The entire mind-matter phenomena, constantly changing. And that is understood at the experiential level. Everything is changing. There is nothing throughout the physical structure or the mental structure as you keep on dividing, dissecting, disintegrating, dissolving, nothing which you can say, this is the hard core and now this remains permanent. You keep on exploring. If there is any hard core, let me see. Let me experience it. And this is what the bhavanamaya panya will do. The anicca, the change, is experienced now. The change is not accepted merely at the level of intellect, not accepted merely at the level of devotion, at the actual level. Change. Initially, you come across very solidified, intense, apparent reality. This body, so solidified, made of bones and flesh, etc. And what you feel on the body, all solidified, intense, like pressure, like heaviness, like numbness, like heat, like pain, all solidified and intensified. As you started observing here, you will start observing things throughout the body and you observe objectively. Not that all the time you will observe objectively, it takes time, but you start working on that. Few moments you get when you observe really objectively. And as you are observing objectively, you find the mind is becoming sharper and sharper. And as the mind becomes sharper and sharper, it starts experiencing subtler and subtler reality. The intensity, through the intensities, through the solidity, you start piercing, penetrating, and you start experiencing subtler reality, subtler reality, subtler reality. Till one reaches the experience where the entire material structure, the entire mental structure is nothing but vibrations, vibrations arising, passing, arising, passing. Bubbles arising, passing, wavelets arising, passing, constant flow, constant flux. Then you are experiencing the truth of impermanence. It is not merely an intellectual game. It is not merely an emotional or devotional game. It's the actual experience of the truth, that what you experience within the framework of the body is a constant flux, a constant flow, every moment changing, 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 changing. Then the madness goes away. Madness of what? Madness of attachment towards this physical structure. Madness of attachment towards this mental structure, the combination of the two. Something which is so ephemeral. What purpose will be served by developing craving towards it, developing aversion towards it, and one learns how to observe. Observe equanimously, equanimously, equanimously. Old habit pattern was to react. This very mind-matter phenomena, generating this sensation or that sensation, pleasant or unpleasant, and a reaction is there, craving or aversion, you lose the balance of the mind, you become very agitated. And now, this first part of wisdom, anicca, will become clearer and clearer at the experiential level. As one develops this part of the wisdom, anicca, 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 everything changing, 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 another part of wisdom will raise its head. Dukkha, O misery. Initially when you start practicing, observing the reality about yourself, coming across very solidified, intensified realities, the sensations which are very painful, heavy, numbness, pressure, tension, etc. Obviously, it is misery. So miserable. You don't like it, you want to get rid of it. And it is there. But you are trained to observe. However misery it is, you just observe. However unpleasant it is, just observe. Just observe. And people reach the stage. Sometimes, on the 7th day, or 8th day, or 9th day, or 10th day, or maybe in 2 courses or 3 courses, they reach a stage where all the solidity gets dissolved and there is a very free flow of subtle vibrations throughout the body, a energy flowing throughout the body, and it looks so pleasant, so pleasant. Ah, wonderful. This is bliss. This is ecstasy. I was looking for it. Now I got my goal. And you develop so much of attachment to it. Ah, I got it. I got it. Without understanding, this is equally impermanent, changing, changing. Morning, you had a wonderful experience of a flow of energy throughout the body. And afternoon, it changed. And you again have pains and heaviness and numbness. And you come to your teacher or your assistant teacher and say, oh, wonderful, morning meditation was so wonderful, and now it is so bad. You become so miserable because you developed attachment to something which was so impermanent. Then it becomes so clear that not only unpleasant sensations are misery, the pleasant sensations are also misery because there is a tendency of your developing attachment to it. And every attachment is synonymous to misery. You are bound to feel miserable because whatever you are attached to is not permanent, is impermanent, bound to change sooner or later. This becomes clearer and clearer. The dukkha, not the dukkha of the pains, etc., but the dukkha of even pleasant sensations in your body. The third part of panya will raise its head. It will become so clear, anatta. No I, no mine. It appears to be so. There is a I in me. It appears to be so. This is mine. But then as you proceed further, at the experiential level, not at the intellectual level, it becomes so clear. What is I? You explore the entire field of matter within you, the entire field of mind, the combination of the two, and nothing but wavelets, 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 bubbles, 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 arising, passing. Now which bubble is I?
this bubble is I, and it's gone away, so I'm gone away. Which wavelet is I? It's gone, so I'm gone, which wavelet? Oh, for conventional purpose, we have to use these words, I, mine, you, yours. Actually, there is no I, no mine. You have to use these words. Otherwise, how can you say this mass of bubble talking to that mass of bubble? It doesn't work. You have to use these words, I, mine, you, you are, he, she, etc. That is apparent truth. It appears to be so. This is also true. But the ultimate truth, the real truth is nothing but wavelets, wavelets, vibrations, vibrations, bubbles, a senseless, this anatta. If there is really I, or if there is really mine, something mine, I must have possession over it. What possession I have got? What possession I have got? At the age of about 40, one looks the face in the mirror and sees some grey hair. Grey hair. I'm getting grey. Oh no. Oh no. And runs to the chemist shop, buys some dye, hair dye, and uses it. I'm young. I'm still young. Tries to deceive others. Tries to deceive oneself. But how to deceive this nature, the law, the Dhamma? One is graying. One is decaying, 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 dying, dying, dying. Every moment you are dying, you are dying, you are dying. If you have control, if you are master of your own physical structure, you say, no, you can't decay. You must remain as I want you to remain. Nothing doing. You are helpless. It is decaying, decaying, decaying. Without understanding this phenomenon, constantly changing phenomenon, one feels so happy. I'm 20 years old, birthday party, big celebration, happy birthday to you, happy birthday to you. Poor chap doesn't understand, he's 20 years nearer his graveyard. What happy? This does not mean that whenever your birthday comes, you start crying, I am nearer 1 year to my... Oh no, Dhamma does not teach you to cry. You understand the reality. This is the fact. So many time is gone now. Whatever is left, I don't know how much is left. Whatever is left, what best use I can make? What best use I can make? Well, this is wisdom. When anatta becomes clear, when anicca has become clear, changing, 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 dukkha has become clear, anatta has become clear, then you are developing, you are getting established in wisdom. Step by step you are moving towards your final goal. Then in day-to-day life you find your wisdom is manifesting itself in your dealing with people, dealing with situation. You understand this is the apparent truth, and you have to deal with the world at the level of apparent truth. You can't say this wall is just mass of vibrations and wavelets. My leg is also just wavelet. I kick it and my leg will go just out of it. Doesn't happen. It will break your leg. So at the apparent level, it is true. It's solid wall and this is also solid. But at the ultimate level, mere vibration, vibration. This also mere vibration, vibration. So that you don't develop attachment towards it. And when that starts happening, you learn how to observe things not just in a solidified reality, apparent reality. Apparent reality is so, solidified reality. You will feel like dividing it, dissecting it, disintegrating it, and see the ultimate truth. When one does not have proper wisdom, and a man looks at the solidified body of a woman, ah, so beautiful, so beautiful. Or a woman looks at the solidified body of a man, oh, so beautiful, so beautiful. When you develop in Dhamma, you will try to understand what beautiful. Let me see. Let me divide, dissect, disintegrate and see what's beautiful. You start from the top of the head. These hairs, ah, beautiful. Blonde hair or brunette hair or silken hair or dark hair or this hair or that hair. One hair has come out. What beauty. You feel like throwing it away. Poor girl, as she was preparing breakfast, a part of this grass fell in the breakfast. And he offered to the hubby. And the hubby found out, hair, oh, dirty hair, you spoiled my breakfast. What dirty hair? Whole evening, whole night you are praising beautiful hair, beautiful hair. Now it has come with your food. Eat it. Why shout? It was beautiful only when it was integrated. When it remained integrated, it was beautiful. The moment got disintegrated, you know no beauty in it. What else beautiful? Move further. You come to the teeth. Ah, wonderful, so beautiful. Rows of pearls. Pearls. One tooth has come out, broken. A pearl has come out. A valuable pearl. Keep it in the safe, in the treasury. Throw it away, a piece of bone. It's a piece of bone the moment it gets disintegrated. When it is integrated, it is a pearl, valuable pearl, a row of pearl. And what else as you move further? Oh, these nails, so beautiful nails. And so well nail polished. To suit the color of the skin or to suit the color of the gown or the sari, so beautiful, so beautiful. And the same story, poor girl, she was clipping her nails and some part of these nails fell in the food. And the husband, so, nails, dirty nails. What dirty nails? Beautiful nails. Beautiful nail polished. And your food is so beautiful, joined together, doubly beautiful. Eat it. What beautiful. What is beautiful? A student comes to me and says, in the West, you know what we say is beautiful. Tell me what is beautiful. Please don't talk about these things. In the West we say beauty is 1/16th of an inch deep. This skin looks so glossy, so smooth. This is beauty, is it? Take a razor, peel little bit of it and see what beautiful. You feel like throwing it away, you can't keep it. What beautiful? Is there anything beautiful inside? If there was anything beautiful, it should come out through this hole or that hole. From which hole what beauty comes out? What beauty comes out? The nature is really very kind to us. Otherwise, if whatever is inside, it was outside, and whatever is outside, it was inside, what would have been our condition? Fighting with the crows, the eagles, the vultures, the dogs, life would have been horrible. What is beautiful? This does not mean that Dhamma will teach you that you start hating people. Oh, you not beautiful, you are ugly, you are mass of bubble. I am also mass of bubble. Dhamma will not teach hatred. As you go deeper and deeper and understanding, develop your panya, mind becomes purer and purer, and pure mind is full of love, infinite love. Full of compassion, infinite compassion, full of joy, sympathetic joy, infinite sympathetic joy, and infinite equanimity, balance. You can't hate anybody. Mere love, goodwill, compassion, love, goodwill. The path takes us to that stage where we come out of our misery, we come out of our defilements and live a real liberated life, enlightened life, a good life, good for us and good for others, for which each individual has to work. Good that you have come here to work. You made a proper preparation these 3 days, and tomorrow you will be entering the field of panya, starting vipassana. But understand, when you start vipassana, don't expect that as soon as you start observing the reality, you will see trillions of subatomic particles arising and passing. Oh, no, no, no. Initially, you will have all these pains and pressures and heaviness, and slowly they will get disintegrated. You will feel a flow of energy, but don't expect anything. Let it happen as it happens, from moment to moment, from moment to moment. Just accept the reality from moment to moment, from moment to moment, and leave it to nature, leave it to Dhamma. You just accept whatever crops up at this moment within the framework of your body, free from all imaginations, free from all verbalization, free from all visualizations, the reality as it is pertaining to your mind-matter phenomena. And certainly, this technique will help you and take you to the final goal. Make best use of the time, the wonderful time. You are given 10 days of your life. You must get best result of these 10 days. And you will get best results. Work diligently. Work ardently. Work patiently and persistently. Patiently and persistently. And come out of all your bondages, all your miseries, to enjoy real peace, real harmony, real happiness, real happiness. Bhavatu sarva mangalam.